Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Well, welcome, church planters. I'm really excited to have this conversation. We've had Tim Elmore on the podcast before, but he's coming out with a new book called The Future Begins with Z, 9 Strategies to Lead Generation Z as They Disrupt the Workplace. And you know me, I love digital technology. I love the future of church, where things are headed. And generational trends is very, very in line with all of the shifts that we're seeing. And Tim, Gen Z is not an easy generation to work with if you're used to the way things were before the iPhone, before social media and the iPhone really had that digital convergence. Why is that?
Well, I think that far too many of us who are over 45 years old really are familiar with the way we've done things. So, like you just hinted, we've got this set way, and Gen Z is not informed by that. In fact, many of them make it all the way through college, and maybe their first job out of college is the first time they've ever had a full-time job. So there's that mismatch there. But they have grown up not with a cell phone, but with a smartphone, and that's been a game changer. So in this book, Chesley, what I try to be is not just a translator, but an interpreter. Translators stand next to you when you're overseas and they speak a different language and they translate word for word. But even then, the nuances are missed, and so forth. So I try to really help perhaps a reader who's over 40 really understand, step into the mind of a Gen Zer, and really then say, they're not my challenge. They're my solution to future challenges, which they'll have intuition about going forward. So it's a really big book of hope is what it is. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that, man. You've written 35 books or more. Is this book 35 or 36?
This is book 40. Yeah.
Book 40. I was like, wow. Okay. I'm even off, man. That's a whole different discussion for another day. Like, book writing is, something that I just did this year. So, but I'm like, man, I am such a novice, but, I'm thinking about, there's so many, you got Jason Dorsey's Zeconomy. You've written on, I think Off the Map and then Habitude. So you've been talking about generations for a while. Obviously Gen Z is this first real digital generation. I think millennials became really a bridge between what used to be and what wasn't. What makes this book different?
Well, I did a book in 2019 called Generation Z Unfiltered, and that was about Gen Zers when they were students. They were in high school and college and younger. This book really addresses the issue of how do we lead them as workers, as team members on a team. So it's for coaches, it's for pastors, it's for business employers. So here's what I say early on in the book that I think makes it different. I tell the story of Colin Webb. Colin is a 20-something. I met him when he was in high school. He was a very smart teen, and so he got an invitation to go to MIT. He graduates with honors, very smart, obviously has a lot of job offers at the end of his college career. Well, he decides to move to Detroit from Boston and work for one of the big three, General Motors. And so he's at General Motors just a few months in the smart car division, and he starts noticing things about this kind of this old school way of doing things that could be improved. So he very, very respectfully meets with a supervisor and says, we could improve professional development over here. We could improve this system and that process. And the supervisor basically shuts him down and says, hey, buddy, just keep your nose to the grindstone, do your work. I don't need any of your ideas. Well, Colin is very respectful, as I just mentioned, but he's not done yet. So Colin writes an email to the CEO of General Motors, Mary Barra, and suggests these ideas. Well, Mary responds. She sends back an email and says, these are great ideas. Let me take them to my executive team. So she takes them to her executive team. They all agree these are really good ideas. But Chesley, as you can imagine, by the time they make their way down the org chart, down to the middle managers and his supervisor, they get shut down again. In fact, he's even told, you need to be around here 8 years before you get to lead anything. So before the year is out, Colin leaves GM. He's now started three companies. He just sent me a note. He's starting this incredible avatar thing where you can move things in California, even if you're in Atlanta. You can robotically. It's just crazy. But my point is this. I think too many companies just shut down Gen Zers because we think they're young and they don't know much. And maybe they don't from our world, but they do see the future more clearly. So bottom line is this. I talk about the Peter Pan paradox. So you remember the story of Peter Pan, right? He's this winsome figure that flies into London. We don't know how he flies, but he flies into London, sprinkles pixie dust on everything, and makes magical things happen. By the same token, the other side of the coin of Peter Pan is he wants to stay in Neverland, where you really don't have to grow up. Herein lies what Gen Z, I think. There's something magic and tragic happening both at the same time in culture today. The age of authority seems to be going down. They're coming in smarter and intuitionally on AI and smart technology, but the age of maturity is going up. So you can imagine this quandary that we find ourselves in if we're older and we don't get it. In fact, even Gen Z supervisors go, I don't understand, 23-year-olds. So there's a quandary that exists that I think we need to lead differently to make our way through. So my exhortation is leaders, pastors, church planters, you're going to have to listen a little bit more than you've ever listened. And you're going to have to coach a little bit more than you've ever coached for these young team members that come in.
Yeah, the people side of the equation is somewhat of a lost art, especially as you get more digital. As you're talking, I was thinking about, we talk church planters all the time and was definitely thinking about the idea of we're decentralizing everything. Yeah. I've been talking to denominations and go, you've got to figure out a way to do an as-you-go model. Yeah. Because with anybody that grew up digital, in the digital age, and they came of age, so my age and younger, they're not asking for permission anymore. So these gatekeeping roles that used to go, hey, it's going to take you 8 years before you earn the right to talk about it. That's not the way we grew up. We grew up in a collaborative environment. You're going to see Web3. Web3 is all collaboration, no authority. The only authority you have is influence, and these kids understand influence more than they understand maturity. And so I'm seeing this shift. They'll just go start another business. Like your example there, you said his name is Colin. Colin is not an exception to the rule. He is the new rule.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
The only difference is he might have had a little bit more respect than maybe some others do.
Totally.
They may come across cocky and arrogant. I don't know that it's always cockiness and arrogance. I think they just see something that we don't see. And the sooner I stop assuming they don't know anything and they're young and dumb and realize, they probably have visibility on the future and where we're going. So, the people skills, though, you just mentioned a really big point. Just the interpersonal skills, we're going to want to build into them so they're not just one-dimensional. And that's going to be key, I think.
Well, and they're trained by an algorithm too that says the best way to get attention is to do it this way.
So
we think they're going to divorce that when they walk into the workplace. And you got a boomer generation, now mostly Gen X, who are in these positions of leadership. They're not aware of how these kids were trained just by our technology. Like they've been raised completely different. So I would love for you to talk about, some of the common myths that we believe about Gen Z. Like what is it that we keep looking at and go, obviously we feel like we're pulling out our hair in some ways.
Yeah. 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 Well, as I did quantitative research, I surveyed over 2014 to be exact, members of Gen Z. And then I did qualitative data, Chesley. I did 13 focus groups from California to Georgia, and I discovered some common myths that really did me well to uncover. So one of them is we very often assume they just don't want to work. They leave right at five. As soon as the clock rings five or whatever, you know, they're out of here. And we don't think they really like work. They don't want to work. Well, I found out, well, that may be true for some, but by the way, that's true for some of my generation too. I must admit, they actually do want to work. But I talked to one gal. I just want to share her story. I told her many bosses think your generation just doesn't want to work. You leave right at five and you're out of there, not even finishing the task you're working on. And she said to me, Dr. Elmore, can I share with you why I leave right at five? I said, sure. She goes, because I have to zip right over to another job. I don't make enough money at this first one to pay the bills out here in California. And then she said, after that other job, I rush over to take care of my mother, who has stage four cancer. So I suddenly realized my assumption was a myth about her. She's probably working harder than her colleagues, but it doesn't look like that because we have one little piece of eyesight there. Here's another one though. I think we often assume that they just don't like any authority. And the fact of the matter is Gen Z is suspect of traditional authorities. They don't trust higher ed. They're charging way too much. And you get a debt after graduation, not a job necessarily. They don't trust the government. They don't trust religious institutions even, by and large. Although there are Gen Zers hopping into the church. We may want to talk about that in just a minute, especially males right now. But traditional institutions, distrust. Not unlike Gen Xers 35 years ago. But here's what I uncovered. They do trust older generations who they know. So the key is to build a bridge and a connection and a relationship where there's trust, and they have no trouble there. But the relationship is not the key. Don't assume I'm going to trust some institution and be loyal to you when you weren't loyal to me in 2020 and laid me off really fast when we were all sent home. You can see why, if they're not loyal, maybe it's because we weren't loyal to them. So it was just good for my heart, you know, to uncover this along the way. And I'm a boomer, so I've been around a long time. And I have fallen in love with Gen Zers and am now learning to make connections that I have never made before. So anyway, that's a couple of myths I uncovered.
Yeah, I appreciate that. As I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about the fact that I've got a couple Gen Zs that work for me. And the pay issue is a big deal. The economic factors and institutionalism is, I mean, it's been deteriorating for a while. Decentralization has created a power dynamic that says the power goes to the individual. So it doesn't surprise me that an older person, that they love the older people. What they don't love is the systems. The system were built to create structural and systemic, replication of a promise that was supposed to be delivered, and it's no longer being delivered through, and it's happening everywhere. It's happening in the church and entertainment and every institution we have. And so what's happening is, I mean, I was just reading an article. It said that some employers are getting rid of 401ks. So I'm like, we're going to go to gig work before we, like, nobody's going to be an employee anymore. Which, as a self-employed person, I know that means self-employment tax, which means, the government's in for a rude awakening. Yeah. Because if I'm paying 40% of my income or 50% of my income to a government where I'm not getting all of these, you know, I'm being double taxed as a self-employed, not as a C-Corp, but as a sole proprietor, which most of these kids are going to be most of their lives, then Social Security is not going to be there. All the institutional pieces are breaking down. But what's so funny about all of this, Tim, is that this is why influencers are becoming like tech unicorns. They're getting investment is because we've moved from an institutional base to a relational base. So like parasocial relationships are so, so important. And I think this relational piece is one of the things that, you know, you were talking about Gen Z coming back to church. I think it's what's driving some of this, especially for young men, where the culture has been anti-young man for about 40 years.
Yeah,
you know, and so now we're seeing all this shift right now. I find it fascinating, Tim. Like, I'm like, it's one of the coolest times to be alive if you're a problem solver like me. I don't know.
It's true. No, you're absolutely right. In fact, you more than me, I think. Well, let me volley back with a couple of thoughts.
Yeah.
One of the really fun conversations I had with these dozens and dozens and dozens of Gen Zers in focus groups was, what do you see in the future? Let me lob a couple of them out there because I think you'll enjoy
it. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I know you enough to know this. Number one, they said shortcuts are the new work ethic.
Yes.
Now,
that makes the hair on
the back of my neck stand up. I'm an old guy. But they weren't saying I don't want to work hard. I think they'll work hard. But they're going, if I can find an easier, more efficient way through technology to get the job done in 4 hours, not 8 hours, isn't that a good thing? You just want me to clock in, Bob, for 8 hours, regardless of what I get done? Of course not. So we need to get ready for, they may not look like grandpa, and that might be a good thing. The 4-day work week is very attractive to them. They can get the same amount of work done perhaps in 4 days, not 5 days. I'm just saying, listeners, let's be open. It may not be they're lazy. It may be they're efficient. I'm just saying. They see way more women stepping into leadership, both ministry and corporations. And I love that. But Chesley, think about this. You know this. There's more women graduating from college than men right now. That doesn't mean they're better leaders, but they're going to be postured a little bit more in perhaps a business or church to take the leadership role. So men may have to swallow their egos a bit and say, yes, ma'am, you know, or whatever. So that could be cool. Anyway, let me just stop because I bet you've seen some of this too. What are you seeing?
Yeah, well, I like being a church planter, this women in ministry thing has been something. I mean, I was an SBC church planter.
Okay.
So I'm praying, Lord, send me leaders. And he kept sending me these phenomenal female leaders.
Wow.
And I'm like, I can't use them.
Yeah.
And he's like, I ain't sending you anymore until you start using the ones I send you. And I'm like, oh, this is how do I deal with the theological, you know, ecclesiological implications of this? You know, so I just started like, okay, if I talk about disciple making, if I talk about church as something different, you know, than what we've seen it. Not in church, I don't mean like the ecclesiology, but more of like, do I have to put this title here or do I have to do this?
Yes.
Like I've got to find ways creatively. And I ended up leaving because, I mean, God started shifting my theology. He couldn't help it. Like it was almost like that Peter moment where Cornelius has three guys coming.
Yeah.
Jesus does the trance, you know, and Peter's like, oh no. And he's like, don't call things unclean that I have called clean. And then he said, I've sent three men, you go with them.
Yeah.
Dawns on Peter halfway across town that where he's headed, you know, and he's I'm not even supposed to be here. And it's like you're witnessing it. I actually think that picture of Peter, that story there is very prescient for the moment we're in. Like the Holy Spirit's moving faster than our theology can catch up. And I know that's pretty controversial, but I feel that way with Gen Z. A lot of these trends feel that way to me.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that is the gap. This quote-unquote generation gap is God shook up Simon Peter's worldview on that day. And I think God's wanting to do that again. And it's not anti-Jesus. It's exactly where Jesus is going. By the way, here's another thing Gen Z brought up to me. You know how you mentioned influencers a bit ago and so many influencers, not the influence. They see companies, organizations, and even churches hiring an influencer. In other words, they will be a team member, but their influence would be harnessed for this brand or this church or whatever. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Some people think Paul just worked with his hands, and he did, but he also raised funds. Don't believe me? Check out Philippians 4, 1 Corinthians 10, and Romans 15. In fact, when the kingdom of God catapulted forward, there was usually a kingdom-minded businessman or woman behind it, like Priscilla and Aquila. If you're going to raise funds, though, do it well. Our partners, Reliant, can help you put rocket fuel in your fundraising tank. I wish I'd had this when I was church planning, but Reliant can partner with you to get you the training and coaching you need to raise that support, as well as provide you with employment services you may need, like payroll, health benefits, and more. To learn more, check out Reliant.org/CPP.
So there's this study called Trends in Personal Brand. I have friends of mine, AJ and Rory Vaden, put it out in the Brand Builders Group. And they talk about the more the organization needs trust, the more important a personal brand is.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm like, if you're a pastor, a lawyer, doctor, like, these things are so important. And this is a world that nobody understands if you're over 40. You just don't understand it. And even I'll say my age, like, you know, I was on Facebook, you know, it was still a college social network. And now it's like, now it's even different. It's the new TV for the digital age. Like, we have the original 8 channels right now. Pinterest, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Like, these are the new TV channels. And the problem is we're living in the middle of it. I feel a lot like my wife's grandmother is going to turn 109 on October 21st.
Wow, that's crazy.
When she was born, she did not have running water. She did not have electricity. She did not have a car. Like, and now she's seeing, like, I mean, we've been to the moon and back. Air travel is as popular as car travel.
Yeah.
Like, internet, like, we can send things across the world. You and I are having conversations. Like, the first time that they saw this, it was on Star Trek in the 60s as a concept.
It's so true. Yeah.
But I feel like we're living in that sort of time. I mean, AI is shifting everything. And this conversation that you're having about efficient work, these wages that they're paying for a 40, 50-hour work week is not enough to buy a house. Which means to be able to do what I need to do, I need to be overemployed, not employed, you know? And so older, like Jamie Dimon, bringing everybody back to the office, people firing young people for having 3 full-time jobs and making $240,000 a year. And I'm like, there's a study that just came out that says to live comfortably as a single person in Phoenix, Arizona in 2025, you need $135,000.
Oh my gosh.
A year.
Oh my gosh. These
kids are figuring out how to live in their reality, and we're still sitting here going like, we don't think you should do it that way. They don't have any other option.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, you know what you remind me of? When I was talking with Colin Webb to interview for the book, I kept bringing up some of these gaps, and Colin kept smiling and saying, "We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out." Now, with his brain, he probably will figure it out.
Yeah.
He sold a company; he's now worth more than I am. But they're in this new world, figuring it out. So you reminded me when you were talking there about probably the most famous anthropologist of the 20th century, Margaret Mead. We quote her all the time. Before she passed away in the 70s. She had a prediction about the future. She didn't claim to be a prophet, but she had a prediction. I think we're seeing it come to pass now. She said, "I see humanity and human history divided into 3 eras. Era number 1, she called the post-figurative era. And what that meant was, if you were a young person growing up thousands and thousands of years ago, you learned everything post the adults. In fact, it was the adults downloading all the information of their customs and traditions of their tribe, and you were to perpetuate it year after year, century after century." She said, with the dawn of the Enlightenment and the Industrial Revolution, we moved into the Age of Reason, and it was a co-figurative era or society. Now the young and old figured out life together because we're both able to read books and reason together. In fact, our country was birthed during that period of time. We hold these truths to be self-evident. But she said, "I think I see coming," and by the way, this was 50 years ago, "I see the day coming where we move into a pre-figurative society, where the young will figure things out faster
than the old. And aren't we talking about this? Now, do we have something to share with them? Of course we do. Some timeless wisdom, we hope, from Scripture that we can pass on. But we need to be listening. Disciple making is both talking and listening now. And maybe equal. So I'll stop there. But isn't that fascinating, that concept?
Yeah, no, I love that. And I love what you just said there. Disciple making is both talking and listening. I wonder if it always has been.
Yeah. At least in our lifetime. We didn't do a good job listening. At least I didn't.
One of us, I had a pastor when I was, he's like, hey, you can't lead until you're 40. I was 23. That was the wrong thing to tell somebody like me. You know, right. And then he's like, you just need to sit down, shut up, and grow up. And I have yet to figure out any of those three.
That's hilarious.
So, you know, I've got a bunch of church planters on here. The people that they are overwhelmingly going to be hiring is Gen Z. If you're planting a church right now, this is just going to be the thing. They're young enough to be able to work 70 hours a week. You know, I heard a pastor say, you build a mega church on the backs of young people. And I don't think he's wrong. They're missional minded. They believe in it. They'll die for it. They have the energy. They don't have the life stage issues. I have two kids now. But the reality is, it is not a millennial generation where millennials were the apex of this institutional, it was breaking, but we were trying to be the cream of the crop, I think, from an institutional perspective. But we just kept getting hit. Gen Z watched us get hit and said, we're not playing that game. You know?
Yeah.
Now we have to think of what are better ways to lead a generation that is prefigurative, like you're talking about, that understands decentralization and doesn't do hierarchy. They think of parasocial, not institutional. What are some strategies that you think are best for leaders to use to lead Gen Z well?
Yeah, I tell you what comes to my mind first. Most young people of any generation, but certainly Gen Z, because they grew up in I can learn independently with my smart device. They're going to have to grapple with the battle that's inside of them between the pull to be me and the pull to belong. I want to be me and I want to belong. And isn't that pull inside of every one of us? But I think as we age and mature, we realize belonging is so important. I see how much I need this community around me. I drive on the right-hand side of the road. Why? It's safer that way, you know, that sort of thing. But I watch my own children go through this. You know, the I want to be me is the purple hair, the rings everywhere, tattoos, nothing wrong with that. But I want to be me. We're yelling that as young adults. But I think when we bring them in and perhaps we're planting a church, I think the conversation between us, but about both of those being important. So Generation Z would distinguish between fitting in and belonging. Here's what I think I heard. They don't want to fit in. In their minds, fitting in is, okay, I see who you are. I now need to squeeze my round peg in a square hole and cut my hair or whatever you want me to do. Belonging is, I can be fully who I am, but bring it to the community and act on behalf of this larger community that is bigger than me. If we can do that, the sky is the limit for church planters, I think, because now you've got full force, 100% energy, and their great future brain, but acting on behalf of something bigger, which is good for them. Do you mind if I interrupt myself?
Go right ahead.
Need to interrupt myself.
Definitely.
I just read some data that might be useful to listeners It stopped me. I had to shut the book and just think. So researchers were studying PTSD, and especially in soldiers that were returning from military service. And their assumption naturally was that they got PTSD from experiencing combat. You know, bullets and bombs must have given them the PTSD. But in their studies, they discover as many people that served in the military that saw no combat had just as high levels or similarly equal levels. And they sat in office or whatever. So they discovered it wasn't necessarily the bullets and bombs.
It was the return to civilian life, which was so isolated and lonely, and you didn't have the camaraderie you enjoyed with that Air Force or Army or Marines, where you had each other's backs. And church planters, isn't that what you want? You do with that core. We've got each other's backs. And I'm telling you, if you can create that, they'll stay because they don't have it anywhere else in this isolated, lonely world where people are living alone, dining alone, traveling alone, more than we've ever done before.
So, yeah. Anyway. Two things that you said out of there that really struck me is the belonging piece. I don't think with church, and I don't mean this in a derogatory standpoint, yeah, but we know how to throw events. Yeah. We're supposed to know how to build community, but we actually know how to throw events. So
it's true.
True. I think that one. And then the second one is the fact that as you're talking, my brother was in the military. I was in the military as well. But coming home and him coming from from Iraq, it was an issue for him. It was hard to transition. Gen Z is, they start out isolated in a lot of ways. And so there's a whole process of this belonging versus fitting in. And the fact that they've been isolated, it's not like they're coming from a communal background, they're not. So they're having to learn communal structures. And I'm just wondering if our hierarchy, the way we're taught org charts, that centralized piece, I don't think leaders understand how to build an organization that says, this isn't about uniformity. This is about belonging. There is a way for complementary skills and personalities to work together. But they're not teaching that in business school. They're not teaching it in seminary. Have you gotten any insight as you're talking to these young people about how do we build a structure for the digital age?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I have all the answers, but I've got an answer.
That's fair. That's good.
Yeah. We started talking about what that looks like, and we always were drawn to the experience of a hard conversation. That's where community either works or falls apart. It's easy to have community when everybody loves each other, everybody's nice, everybody's high-fiving. We just had a great Sunday, right? But the hard conversations, when things are not going well, mistakes were made, something needs feedback and correction. So what I came to, I may have shared some of this when we've had a past podcast, Chesley, but it was a four-step process that I am now using all the time that deepens my community with Gen Zers and anybody. So it's ask, listen, empathize, guide. So when I see something has gone wrong and we need to have a conversation, instead of going to that person and telling them what they did wrong, which is exactly what I want to do because I have the answer, I need to start asking, what made you do that? Or what was your thought process behind that action you took? When I ask someone about their decisions and what their thinking was, it always adds value. They feel valued. Anytime I'm asked questions, I feel valued. Listening is the next step. And when I listen, they feel heard. If I'll stop and actively listen, they now feel, they feel they have a voice, which is one of the top things they come to any workplace with. I want to have a voice from day one. Empathize is next. When I empathize with them, that means I'm finding ways to say, oh my gosh, I had no idea that was true. Or I bet that made you feel horrible when that happened. When I do that, now they feel understood, which has now earned me the right to do step four, which is to guide, which is what I wanted to do from the very beginning. But you see, I did it through relationship, not through a position. It was through a bridge I built, not a badge I wear. I know we've been saying this all through this conversation, but if we can do this as senior leaders, as chief church planters with a team of volunteers, I'm telling you, the organization chart is flat. We still run point, but we run point through relationships and this community. So if we'll pursue that first and not need a title, even though we've got one, now we've got something. You know what I'm reminding myself of? Adam Grant at UPenn said we're experiencing the democratization of the workplace. That's what we're talking about here. The democratization. Yep. Yeah.
Which is where Web3 is headed, which yeah. we won't even get into that. But
yeah.
I was thinking of Stanley McChrystal, General Stanley McChrystal's book, Team of Teams. So yeah. I don't know if you've read it, but he talked about when they were in the surge in Iraq, before the surge, actually, that they were actually getting beat by Iraqi militants.
Wow.
And the reason why was we had a hierarchical model. Every time we'd shoot down a general, five of them would pop out, you know, on the other side. And so we had to learn how to have this amoeba-like structure that says we're going to structure when we need it and we're going to flatten when we need it. Everybody knows the structure, but communication and information have to flow seamlessly to where a private can go to a general and say, this is what I'm seeing. This is what, but all of that intel on the ground was it was getting filtered and not even getting to the top. And so they created, reward and punishment structure for lower level, officers. So they would be forced to move information because they weren't used to it.
Yes.
You know? And so I think that's going to be, which is obviously what happened to Colin.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I'm thinking through as you're talking about this piece is the fact that there is this, I don't know, there's this structure that I'm seeing emerge with young people to where I think they would be more comfortable with gig work, but they don't. Mostly because they get to be a free agent. Because what's happened is you got an institutional, like I would say pre-digital is institutional. Digital is very much relational and connective. And so what's actually happened is this lack of permission structure. Authority was assumed in a pre-digital age.
Yeah.
Authority is earned in a post-digital age. And so as you're talking about this, I'm noticing like more and more a need for a formalization of permission structures of permitting you to do this. You're permitting me to do this. So as a Gen Zer coming into the workplace, they've got to give you permission to lead them and be an authority over them. If they don't give you that permission, they will look at you as a gig and they will move on. So there's got to be this communal process that says, this is what you can expect of me. This is what we expect of you. I give you permission for this. I'm asking you, if you sign on this dotted line, you're giving me permission for this.
Yeah.
And spell it out, because it used to be assumed that you sign on the dotted line, I'm your boss. I basically, I own your life.
Own you. That's right. It's you know, true. That was the world I moved into when I started my career.
I remember being a telemarketing agent in college, and they said, if you don't get two sales before lunch, you're going home. I'm like, and rather than going, I'm out, I would just fret and be an anxious ball and go, how do I get my two? How do I get my two? I was so shameless. I told them, they're going to send me home at lunch if I don't get my two sales. Which my bosses didn't care how you got the two sales.
Yeah,
but the reality is, Gen Z would not, they'd be like, I'm not showing up to work.
Yeah.
That's dumb. You know, but I think it's this assumption, you know, that, hey, what used to be assumed from a permission structure and an authority structure is no longer assumed.
Yeah.
So I think, talk about that. How would you do that in a way that's constructive for people that are your age and, you know, probably a little bit older than me? Like my wife is right at that line. She grew up in Arkansas with a very traditional household. So very pre-digital in a lot of ways. She's only 4 years older than me. You know, I am on the cusp. So I like typing classes were always required the year after I got through them, but I got to learn how to build websites in school. So I had a digital makeup, but it's a totally different ball game when you're an older generation trying to lead this generation. Talk about how we can do permission structures well.
Let me throw out a couple of thoughts. One, we've already hinted at, but it might be good just to underscore now. I would say to church planters and any leader for that matter, don't think gatekeeper, think guide. So that's the removal of this structure in our heads that we have, or maybe on a whiteboard in the conference room, and we just see ourselves as guides. Think of yourself as a Sherpa guide walking up a mountain. Nobody cares about badges. We're wanting to get to the top. Let's climb together. But we probably know a little bit more about climbing. So don't think gatekeeper, think guide. Leaders, don't think control, think connect. So I don't know about you, Chesley, but as a leader of 45 years now, if I see something go wrong in the church or wherever I am, I just want to seize control. You know, just get out of my way. I'm going to make this right. But, you know, control is a myth, isn't it? None of us are in control. God's in control. We're not in control. But if I think connect, the proverbial arm around their shoulder where I'm connecting, I don't get control, but I get deep influence. But again, it's through a bridge, not a badge. I would say don't think what, think why. So when I tell Gen Z workers what to do, they may buy it, they may not. They probably have a better idea, actually. But if I think explain why we need something done, they may go, Tim, I think I may have a better way to get to that goal in 4 hours, not 8 hours, like I said before. And I would go, hallelujah. So be sure and give them the why, not just the what, when you're giving direction. And again, I would say, don't think inputs, think outcomes. So if you're measuring, okay, like sales, I need 2 sales before noon or you're out of here. I would just say, here's the goal, however you want to get to it. Go, baby, go. I'm telling you, they surprise me continually with ingenious ways to get to the goal that this old brain never thought of. The last thing I would say may sound cliche, but in case you might be old school listeners right now, don't think manager of people, think mentor of people. When I approach my supervisory role as a mentor, oh, it so changes the demeanor on my face, the approach with my words, you know, the belief I have in them, which may not come out very well if I'm managing these people. Nobody wants to be managed. Nobody's saying, would you manage me, please? But they are saying, could you coach me a little bit? So those are just some simple shifts that I have made that have helped me.
I always say you can't manage people. You can only lead them. I have a mentor. He's like, listen, that looks good on paper and then people happen. You know,
that's so true.
So there's a story. If you remember Linux back in the early days, Linus Torvalds, I think, is the guy that started it. It was one of the first software that was open source. Microsoft tried to stop it. Well, now Microsoft was running on Linux. Like most of the big stuff is ran on Linux now, at least in certain sectors. And what they did really, really well was they built the sandbox, the boundaries, the process by which somebody would contribute. So here are the operating rules of engagement. And then outside of that, like if you see a patch that needs to happen, go for it. If you see, I think we have dictated the how so much in the past. That what you're saying is true, but then you got the questions of, well, how are we going to pull that off? Like, we're not used to that. Build the box. Say, here's the rules that we all are agreeing to. Here's the standards. And you as a leader are, you know, making sure that the standards are met and that everybody's operating with inside of that. But if you've got to be very clear in communicating that. But I think that's probably the best way of moving forward. As I'm listening to you, I just kept thinking Linux. I'm hearing you got to build the operating procedures like Linux built it so that anybody can play wherever they operate. And again, Web3, I keep coming back to it. And church planners are like, this makes no sense. But they have this thing called smart contracts that are allowing us to have these headless organizations. And these smart contracts are doing exactly that. Yeah. They're saying, we are agreeing that this is the standard. We actually do have an ancient form of this. It's called the U.S. Constitution. It's supposedly something that we all come together and agree upon. You know, most of the time, how we interpret it might be a little bit different. But so I keep thinking about that as you're talking, okay, we have, if we, you know, we're always repeating the past in some ways. Like it's not, it's not foreign what we're doing. Like we have gone through times of disruption before. How have we come through it? Why are you so optimistic about the future when we're all in this mess right now, trying to figure out how do I lead Gen Z? All of my structures, the institutions are falling apart. It doesn't feel very optimistic.
Yes.
You know, you and I are having a conversation. Well, you and I both are optimistic about the future. Why can't we remain optimistic as leaders?
Let me say one quick thing, Justin, before I answer that question. As you were talking and kind of summarizing what we've said, I realize church planters listening, you must be thinking, but we need some system. You can't, it just can't be completely organic and we're water going every direction. That is true. So I think there needs to be some sort of organic balance between anything goes, there's no structure, and we're overstructured. I teach leadership with images. Habitudes are images that form leadership habits and attitudes. One of my favorite ones is called trains and tracks. And it simply paints the picture of no locomotive engineer would stop at a train station, get off the train, walk inside and say to somebody, this train track is too confining to me. I feel like I'm just bound here. I'm taking this train up the hill, right off the tracks, and let's see how far we can. That would be stupid. The track actually helps him get where he wants to go in a swifter manner. So we do need train tracks. We do need systems. But we don't need them. We need them to be a guide, not a god. So church planters, as you're putting together your systems, just know they need to make sense. Explain why they're there to the artsy, especially to the creatives that are joining your team that go, this is too confining. Make sure they, so those are train tracks. We need train tracks. And then explain why. But then don't get overstructured. So Leslie, here's why I'm optimistic. I believe if we can change the way we lead them, Generation Z is positioned to take us someplace we are not prepared to go on our own. Those of us, let's say 30, 35 or older. So one of the stories I tell in the book illustrates why I'm optimistic. When my generation was the young bucks coming into the workplace way back in the 60s, you remember what happened in the 1960s? The U.S. did something that we had never done before. We put a man on the moon. In July of 1969, Neil Armstrong walked out on the moon, then Buzz Aldrin did, and we did something no one had ever done. When JFK, our president, made the speech twice that we were going to pull that off, NASA did not even have the technology to do such a thing. So they were quickly scampering in Houston about what do we got to do? What do we got to do? So they bring in this new technology, probably a lot from MIT and Purdue and Georgia Tech. But when they bring it in, those 55, 60-year-old operators didn't know, they were not familiar with it. The interns were. So those young whippersnappers coming up right out of college who had served as an intern for a year or two were very adept. And so a shift took place in the 1960s, where the older generations that had been running those computers were now SimSoups, simulator supervisors. They were coaching the 20-somethings that were now on the operating platforms that put Neil Armstrong on the moon. Do you realize the average age of the guys working at the operator that put Neil Armstrong on the moon? 27 years old. 5 years out of college. In fact, the guy that actually said go, not no, and they pulled the trigger and did it, Jack Garmin, 23 years old, 1 year out of college. So both took their place. The old became the coaches. Let me share with you what we've learned over the years. But they were empowering to the young who saw. They were interviewed later as 75, 85-year-old guys, and they said, we didn't know what we didn't know. We just said, let's do this, man. Church planters, that's what we got to say today. Let's do this. Let's do something nobody's ever done before because the world is at a place we've never been before. But I have hope if NASA can do it 60 years ago, We can do it now with the stuff that is about the kingdom of God.
That's so good. So future begins with Z, 9 strategies to lead Gen Z, Generation Z, as they disrupt the workplace. If you're a church plant, if you're a church planter, you're a pastor, you got to pick up the book. Listen, I haven't read all 40 of your books, but I've read, I know 9.
Okay.
9 of them. Yeah. But man, Tim, every time we talk, I just come away. I'm like, man, we need to get together at some point and have coffee.
I would love that. Hey, listen, I would love that. Every time I'm with you, I learn something. So it's just fun. So yeah, let's make sure we get a chance to.
I feel the same way, Tim. I mean, it's a phenomenal conversation. And if you're a planter, like, you need this, like, you're going to have to think things differently. And it's going to take you stepping back and becoming the Sim suit for this generation, because I think the church is going to look totally different in the next 5 to 10 years than we can even imagine. And if you're not on that process and that system, then you're going to get left behind in that as well. So, Tim, thank you. Sounds like you have a dog that's right on
yes,
time.
Yes, I do.
He's like, it's time to go out.
That's right. Yep. Great to be with you today.
You too, Tim. Thanks, buddy. Okay. Appreciate it.
Yeah.